Debbie Jorgensen, and this is Fascinating Ordinary, where we get curious about everyday things that are actually amazing.
We're really glad that you're here with us. Abby, which rabbit hole are we going down today?
So today we're going down a rabbit hole of a thing that I feel a lot, and sometimes I feel good about feeling it, and sometimes I feel bad about feeling it, but the feeling itself doesn't really have a name. And so after a lot of discussion, we've decided to call this feeling the joy of watching others struggle.
I'm going to tie into this a show where we get to watch a wealthy white man struggle, which I think we're going to enjoy. I think all of us really enjoy. And so that man is Jeremy Clarkson.
Yes. So if you are not a longtime fan of Top Gear or other shows like I am, my husband and I have watched like every episode I think ever made of Top Gear. We watched the Amazon reboot Duran Tour as well. But we were really into the show, and I'm not really into cars, but I got to know the one of the lead hosts, Jeremy Clarkson, through that. And Jennifer, you had never watched any of this stuff, right?
No, I never watched Top Gear, but I'm almost certain that I've seen a video, probably on YouTube, where a car or motorcycle is racing a helicopter.
That sounds right.
Okay.
That sounds absolutely right to any of those shows, actually. Yeah. Yes. So the show is purportedly about cars and vehicles, but there are three hosts on the show, and one of them in particular, Jeremy Clarkson, has a lot of, let's say, notoriety. So when my husband and I found out a couple of, I don't even know at this point, months, years ago, that there was a show that was starring each of them individually, we decided to watch the pilot episode for all three of them. And this was the one that we actually watched the rest of the show for, like this one about Jeremy Clarkson. And the show is called Clarkson's Farms. So when I started telling Jennifer, like, there's this really weird, like, feeling that I've been thinking about a lot of the joy of watching others struggle, the example that I kept referring to was this show, because there's so much joy in watching Jeremy Clarkson struggle for a lot of different reasons that we'll get into, and some that I think are really beautiful, and some that I think are really just, and some that I think are probably just me being petty. But with all those in mind, I kept bringing up the show, and finally Jennifer decided to watch it.
I did. That's right. And I recommend the show to anyone who enjoys watching others struggle, or farming, or reality TV. I think it has a lot of, it like hits a lot of the notes that any good reality TV show hits. But our warning, if you enjoy watching shows with little ones, or, you know, if you're particularly sensitive, the show Clarkson's Farm has a ton of swear words in it.
Yeah.
We're not going to use those swear words here.
Right.
Yeah.
But the show itself does have a lot. So that's not one that's appropriate for some ears, which is also true, incidentally, of Top Gear and things like that. But I will say that the show itself is like an interesting sort of ode to farming. So the premise of the show, like you were saying, Jennifer, is that Jeremy Clarkson decides that now that Top Gear and the follow-up Grand Tour are over, or at least temporarily over, he's going to go to this farm that he's owned for years and actually learn to farm it. So he's been hiring other people to do that work for him. And that's the premise of the show. So I come to that show watching years of Jeremy Clarkson, knowing a lot about him. And Jennifer, how did you come to it?
Well, my friend Abby told me. that was the reason that I decided to watch the show, was you had talked it up so much, and in the context of watching others struggle, that, you know, this is interesting and worth my time. And I love TV, so it wasn't hard to decide to watch something. And I think even, like, when we started talking about doing an episode about this, and you had said, or, you know, however we decided to sort of divvy up the labor on this, and I said, oh, yeah, I'll watch the show. You're like, how much time are you going to dedicate to this? There's so many episodes. And
there are like eight episodes.
Yeah, there's eight episodes, and I don't know, they might be an hour long each. And I was just like, that's fine.
It's like a sincere commitment, though. Yes. I had a really hard time figuring out when to watch, like, Keeping Up with the Kardashian episodes on chickens for our bonus episodes.
22 minutes. Yeah. But no,
in my defense, I bet that you got a lot more out of Clarkson Farms than I got out of the one.
Out of the Kardashians.
Kardashians episode.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, we'll find out.
Yeah.
You haven't told me what you thought yet, so I'm excited to hear that. So, but that's a little bit about the premise for the example that we're going to be referring to throughout the course of today's episode. But the basic premise itself is something that whether you've seen Clarkson's Farm or not, you might relate to or you might have heard of before. So this idea of like taking pleasure in watching other people struggle, do hard things, get their comeuppance, all these different terms, right? That's something that we've probably heard of before, right, Jennifer?
Mm-hmm. So one of the ways that we have talked about struggle and watching people struggle is obviously with the negative valence of this. We see a lot of that in reality TV, but also just kind of in the world. And Abby, why don't you tell us about Schadenfreude?
So Schadenfreude is the German word for this kind of feeling of like, I am taking pleasure in the fact that someone else is having a hard time. There's like a vindictiveness or a sense of justice here of like, I don't like this person and it's great for me. Like I'm sitting here and I'm taking pleasure in the fact or enjoying the fact that they're having a hard time in their life right now. Or like, this person's a jerk and they deserve to have a hard life and now they do and that's wonderful. So that idea of Schadenfreude is something that I think people have heard about before. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it made like a regular appearance on The Office actually. I think there's like an entire episode about Schadenfreude. But another concept that's really similar to Schadenfreude, but a little bit different in important ways, is karma. Mm-hmm. So karma is a theosophical principle that what goes around comes around. Each person is rewarded or punished according to their deeds. And sometimes this means in a previous incarnation for some religious approaches, and sometimes it just means that like if you did something bad yesterday and something bad happens to you today, you shouldn't really be surprised.
But the difference between karma and Schadenfreude is going to be that with karma, this is about retribution.
Right. And it's not you.
What do you mean? It's not you.
So for Schadenfreude, it's about me taking pleasure in someone else. The main interaction is between me and someone else.
Oh,
whereas
yeah.
with karma, it's the universe, right? It's the cosmos is creating this balance over time. And you taking pleasure in that would actually be bad karma for you.
Yeah,
so if you are indulging in Schadenfreude, that is bad karma for you. Even if you might be thinking that the other person is like experiencing karma because mm-hmm. they're experiencing mm-hmm. something bad. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm sorry I cut you off before.
No. That absolutely makes sense.
And if anyone has good resources for us on understanding the intricacies of this, I'd love to learn more because what I learned is just half of like an hour reading Buddhist principles and that was about it. So I would really, really love to learn more about that. Send us those if you know them. But the idea of this is that there's like, this is a fairly common experience, right? Of like, I bet many of us, at least if you're half as petty as I am, can think of a moment where you took pleasure in someone else having trouble doing a thing
mm-hmm.
because you thought that they were a bad person or a mean person.
Well, and also sometimes when you have no context, Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of Charlie Chaplin movies, clips you may have seen online are like him getting hurt.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
You know, and it's fine in the joke. Like, he's in on the joke.
Right.
But the joke is him getting hurt.
So that, I feel like, is different, though. Because you're not actually taking pleasure in someone else's pain, then. Because we know Charlie Chaplin's not actually in pain, right? Or at least he's not suffering, because he's choosing that.
So, yeah, the point is there's so many TV shows, dating back from when TV shows first existed mm-hmm. to now, that are a group of people who have, like, willingly, knowingly signed up to participate in getting hurt.
Yes.
Survivor. I'm just thinking like the list goes on. Alone. There's like a reality TV show where like people go out into the wilderness by themselves.
Oh, and then, yeah.
And part of the fun of the show is like, what is wrong with this person that they have signed up to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yep. But it's not even just TV, right? This shows up a lot. I remember this a lot in the Hardy Boys series when I read that when I was little. Of, like, every villain in the Hardy Boys series, you're, like, supposed to hate them from the get-go, right? Mm-hmm. They say something mean or they do something rude to an old lady or something like that. And then we know, like, we're not supposed to like you. And then when they get their comeuppance, there's just something more satisfactory about mm-hmm. it, right? And that's because of Schadenfreude. That's because of this idea that, like, we take pleasure in watching others struggle, especially if we think that they have done something rude or bad or they had it coming sort of a thing.
Yeah.
So you did not know much about Jeremy Clarkson when
That's
you started.
Correct.
You still don't know a whole lot about Jeremy Clarkson.
I know a lot about his farming.
I'm so excited to get into that. But before we do,
yeah,
I want you to scroll down on our notes.
Okay.
To the part that says, Jennifer, don't read this.
Okay.
And in there I have selected excerpts from the Wikipedia page about Jeremy Clarkson that I'm going to not have you read because I don't want that to be in the podcast, but I want you to like scan them and give me your impressions at the end of that.
Well, I mean, can I read the introduction?
Sure, go for it.
Okay. Jeremy Charles Robert Clarkson is an English broadcaster, journalist, farmer, game show host, and writer who specializes in motoring. Clarkson's opinionated but humorous tongue-in-cheek writing and presenting style has often provoked a public reaction. His actions, both privately and as a Top Gear presenter, have also sometimes resulted in criticism from the media, politicians, pressure groups, and the public. Okay. Okay. Oh my gosh. So he punched Piers Morgan in the face.
Yep. Left a scar.
Oh, he drove... he drove a car into a tree... to test the strength, I guess, of the car.
Yep.
And then he paid £250 to the town council for damaging the tree. Poor tree. Oh, interesting. He rejected the scientific consensus on climate change. That's going to come up again later.
Okay.
Okay. All right. He was flippant about it, too.
Mm-hmm. Not very nice to the people of Miami, North Carolina, or Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. No. He's against climate activism. I think it's like he insulted Greta Thunberg.
This is why I didn't want you reading these out loud.
Yeah. Oh, God. He was flippant about the Holocaust. So, yeah, there's no.
It just keeps going.
Yeah. Oh, God. He's insulting to adolescents. He joked about. Lorry driver. What are lorry? Are they taxi drivers? Oh, trucks. Yeah. Okay. That's right. A lorry is like a long haul truck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. He made offensive jokes about them. He made an offensive joke about the British Prime Minister. Slurs about Asians. Slurs about, I wanted to say African Americans, but I don't know that, like, is it black British citizens?
Well,
I guess there's no context here. The point is.
Well, the context is it comes from a poem was written in the American context.
Oh, okay. So, yes. Yeah, it could be. And then, so BBC. Gave him a warning that he would be fired if he made another offensive remark.
So this is not even just like, you're being rude. It's like you're being so rude that a TV organization cannot keep you on.
Yeah.
And then, you can read that one out loud if you want to.
Okay. In 2015, the BBC decided not to renew Clarkson's contract after he assaulted a Top Gear producer while filming on location. Oh my goodness. When we talk about the show, like Clarkson's Farm, I think some of this is definitely going to come up again.
Mm-hmm.
But also, this really puts into context some of the things, like there were questions that I had in particular about his commitment to climate change and global warming that now I'm going, oh, maybe it just makes me think I understand less his persona.
Because that's jarring to you. That wasn't what you expected from watching the show.
Exactly.
So I'm interested that this surprised you because I do think there was a really drastic difference between the Jeremy Clarkson I knew and then the Jeremy Clarkson that I saw on Clarkson's Farm. And I think that was part of its charm for me was this like, There were a lot of moments in the show where there was this comeuppance for this person that I knew was honestly just seems like a bully.
Yeah.
In a lot of different ways toward a lot of different people. And then all of a sudden things get really hard for him when for years organizations have been covering up for his mistakes and making sure that he still has everything he needs. Right after the BBC fired him, Amazon hired him.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea of like somebody who is always protected, all of a sudden not being protected from things like sheep.
Yeah.
And rain and things like that. I will admit that I had some Schadenfreude going on. This is the karma that's coming to him as I'm watching him struggle throughout the show.
Yeah, I could see that. It's so interesting having come from the perspective of not knowing him as a bully, mm-hmm. and then getting to know him, and that he is a bully really comes across, and I'm sure I said something to that effect in my notes, but it seems a lot more give and take, mm-hmm. where, you know, the world is beating him down, and also the people he surrounds himself with are, like, constantly yelling at him for doing things wrong, mm-hmm. and, like, being mean to him for doing things wrong. But knowing that off camera, I mean, I can't say and you can't say what he's doing off camera, but it's just hard for me to believe that someone exhibits in public and private bullying behavior, like bigotry, et cetera, et cetera. And then that this late in life, he would, like, turn a new leaf.
Yeah.
So it's probable, as far as I can tell, that he acts that way now and in this context as well. And so that his girlfriend and his land manager and his farmhand would all, like, fight back to me sounds just better. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. fine. You know, it's not that they're mean and he's mean. Mm-hmm. It's that they're fighting back.
Which is interesting, yeah. because he's usually the one making the jokes on the other shows. Mm-hmm. And then we get to this show and he's the punchline.
Yeah.
In so many of these jokes of, like, what were you doing? You didn't arrange trucks. Like, where are we supposed to put all this grain we just harvested? Like, what is your problem? Why did you buy a tractor that doesn't actually fit in your barn? Like, these sorts of questions. And so there's a huge side of, like, Shaun and Freida for me with this. So that was something, too, when I was reading the reviews of the show that a lot of people who knew Jeremy Clarkson really well pointed out. I was not alone in that. So if you are a better person than I am and you did not feel that when you watched it to see what Jeremy Clarkson was doing next, good for you. But I think there's also a really interesting, like, flip side to this as well, which is that watching others struggle isn't always bad. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is that in this show, there are a lot of moments where I am really rooting for Jeremy, too. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly like the sort of persona that he has put forward. I can hope and pray that he has changed and become a better human being to other human beings, right? But like you said, I don't really expect that to have happened. But there were still moments in the show where I was rooting for him. Mm-hmm. Because at some level, you want to see people's hard work pay off. And you want to see the love that someone puts into something. And I do use the word love. Like, I think he does start to love some of the, like, nature and creatures that he's interacting with. Mm-hmm. And it makes me want him to succeed. Yeah. But it doesn't take away the fact that I'm enjoying watching him struggle. Mm-hmm. Like, as he's trying to figure these things out, I'm excited for him in his efforts. And I'm kind of rooting for him.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And I know you and I have talked about this before, mm-hmm. And I don't know how deeply we want to get into it, but I do feel like this is a good place to bring up the vein of love of hard work, mm-hmm. is very strong, mm-hmm. in our American culture, mm-hmm. And I can't say for the British culture, like, I don't know if they have it the way we have it, but obviously as a sociologist, I cannot help but see the connection to Weber and the Protestant work ethic.
It started in Europe, to be fair.
Yeah, absolutely. The Protestants came here because everyone was like, why are you working so hard? go do that someplace else. And that's the true story, if you wanted to know how the Protestants got here to America.
It had nothing to do with, like, trying to get more stuff or take things or conquer the world. Nope, nothing to do with that at all.
No.
Yep. No. But this idea of, like, hard work and wanting people's hard work to succeed does have a lot to do with meritocracy and with all these different, like, values that we have in the American, mm-hmm. context, and I think probably in a lot of the European context too, mm-hmm. but some of the examples that I've thought of with this are really hard for me to put a name to, because there isn't a name like Schadenfreude for the type of, like, taking, mm-hmm. pleasure in other people's hard work when you want them to succeed, mm-hmm. And taking pleasure in watching them face struggles because you're rooting for them. So, like, the examples I've come up with include sports, mm-hmm. literally every sports game is, like, all the people watching are enjoying the struggle of one team trying to beat the other team, mm-hmm. right? That's just the best example I could think of, the most straightforward. Okay, you're taking joy not in the team winning necessarily, yeah. right? You are watching the game for an hour, for 4 hours for Notre Dame football, whatever it is, right? Like, you are watching that game for that long, taking pleasure in the act of people struggling.
Yeah.
And it's not a vindictive thing. So to be very clear, I think this has a positive valence or like a supportive valence compared to the first thing we talked about. But it is really strong. So another one is detective shows. Mm-hmm. I love detective shows. I love reading Sherlock Holmes. I love reading like the Hardy Boys, right? Yeah. All these different, all mysteries are like us enjoying someone else struggling to figure something out. And sometimes, especially with like, when I think about how much I love Sherlock Holmes, the serialized nature of how Sherlock Holmes came out, like one little story at a time in the newspaper, meant it was always a cliffhanger and you never know. And then like, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read Sherlock Holmes, he dies at one point and then you're just like, oh my gosh, yeah. right? Like,
yeah.
But that idea of like watching somebody struggle and just trying to figure it out where he even loses, mm-hmm. I still take pleasure in reading that, right? Yeah. Like I still love that. Other examples. Doing puzzles. Do you like doing puzzles?
I love puzzles.
Why?
Yeah. I like overcoming the challenge. I like cracking the nut, as I say. Just solving the puzzle.
But it's not actually just like having solved it.
No, that's true. The working through. I mean, that's, I think anyone who like takes on like a multiphasic problem yep. or process mm-hmm. or you know you have to learn a new skill that yep. you can implement at work mm-hmm. it's something you either enjoy it or you want it done
yep
and if you're the kind of person who enjoys it then you might keep heaping that sort of thing onto yourself
yep
and trying to learn new things all the time
like knitting or painting
yeah
or all these different things right so many types of crafting puzzles okay the story of Cinderella because I watched
yeah.
that
yeah
like I said to you the other day, and the entire story of Cinderella is, like, really just depressing until the last 2 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Is what I learned. And
then it all turns around.
Right. Yeah. So if people like that movie, they must only like it because they're enjoying watching Cinderella struggle, not because. Yeah. So other examples I had thought of included getting PhDs. So, like, Jennifer's, I've watched you try to figure out methods for your dissertation. There is just, like, hurdle after hurdle that keeps coming up for you. And there is a sort of, like, joy in me getting to watch your persistence. Of, like,
I'm glad she figured it
out.
Joy.
What's yeah. the next thing she's going to figure out kind of a thing, right? Yeah, and like you just alluded to, that doesn't mean that the person who's doing the struggling is experiencing the joy. But me as, like, the voyeur in this mm-hmm. situation being, like, oh, she did it. Like, what's the next thing she's going to do? Mm-hmm. And then, like, oh, she's figuring this out. Like, I'm seeing her think through this. Like, that's – I can see your skill set at work. I can see how much your intelligence and your know-how and your just absolute dedication to this is coming through. And that's really beautiful, right? So, like, I really do hope you figure out the methods stuff. And you've continued to, like, figure out new methods challenge after new methods challenge. So I'm certain you will. But the idea of watching somebody do that process and enjoying that process mm-hmm. is the key here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think, though, that this – even this positive example can encourage – really bad behavior, like even if we're being supportive of people. So think about my sports example, right? Like if we are enjoying sports so much that we are making sure that people continue to have exposure to like life-threatening or career-ending brain injuries, mm-hmm. right? Like things that really, really shape the rest of their existence, that's probably not a good thing. So I want to be clear that even though I see this like more positive valence of schadenfreude, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that it's always good in its outcome too. Mm-hmm.
That there needs to be, like, a healthy limit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So with that in mind, though, do you think that this is ethical to have, like, a joy in watching other people struggle?
Yeah. I don't think it's unethical, I guess, is the other way to say it.
Okay.
You know, I think if you had asked me that before I had a child, I might have answered differently.
Okay. How so?
Well, I think in the past I would have said, even now, to some degree, I think the idea of, like, radical rest is, like, brilliant and mm-hmm. wonderful. Like, that not everything should be about struggle and that not everything should be about achievement. Mm-hmm. Because I think that gets so tied up in, like, a consumerist culture that prizes, like, the new over the good.
Yeah.
And the good might be something you already have and might be something you don't have to struggle for. Mm-hmm. But since having a child and watching him struggle to learn how to be a person in mm-hmm. the world, and there's no way around it. There's no mm-hmm. shortcut to it.
Yeah.
And so in places and times and situations like that where the only way through is through the struggle, then I think it's good and appropriate to watch it with joy. Mm-hmm. I think, again, I mean, as you said, like, there can be bad sides to it, or there can be, like, I keep wanting to say toxicity, but it's such a like, loaded term, and it's shorthand. I feel like I'm saying toxicity the way people would say literally to mean figuratively.
Okay.
Like, so I don't mean there's a, that we have to watch out for the toxic nature of it, but just sort of the point at which it moves from the healthy appreciation of somebody doing hard work they need to do into like enjoying their struggle at all costs. Like exactly like you said, the sports metaphor, the sports example, I think is a great one. So what about you? Do you think that this is ethical?
I think that there are ways in which it is possible that this is ethical, but I think generally this is probably unethical. Like, so it's a tool, but I think the way that it usually gets used, right, is value neutral as a tool, but the way it usually gets used is probably not ethical. And this is something that I want to work on in my own life and have been working on since I thought about this whole concept. This all came up as, like, my self-improvement project, right, of, like, how do I figure out, like, to view other people's experiences and to be more aware of all of the, like, values and judgments and prejudices that I'm bringing to those. So something like Clarkson's Farm was really influential for me at that we watched that in that time period where I was like, oh gosh, I really need to figure out how I want to let other people view my experience. And then I also have to figure out what that means about me viewing other people's experience, right? And so going through something where you have to figure out, like, what do I want to share and with whom and how? Definitely plays into this, like, what sorts of people are going to be really happy that I am, in my case, like, really, really ill, versus, like, what kinds of people are going to be, like, excited to hear the updates about how ill I am because they're rooting for me, versus, like, so getting sick, getting chronically sick was a really big piece for this. Thinking about, like, what is the ethicality, like, what is the default ethicality for me, and then could I make that better? Like, how can I check myself and really interrogate, like, what sorts of assumptions are going into this sort of joy that I'm taking? So I've interrogated myself a lot on things like taking pleasure in you struggling for your PhD. And I have realized I'm pretty sure that that's ethical because it's like an admiration, right? It's coming from, like, a, that is beautiful. Like, you're doing such a good job and I'm so excited for you and so proud of you in, like, a non-patronizing way. Like, I had nothing to do with the fact that you're succeeding, right? At all.
I don't know.
But, like, that's like, very,
Abby,
I honor.
Abby served as in a mentor role for me for, like, several years.
That's true. I mean, it's on my CV, actually. But that idea of, like, any role that I played was very, very minimal, and it was supporting you in doing the thing. It wasn't doing the thing for you, right? So that idea of, like, coming from a place of admiration and, like, non-patronizing pride, which I still don't know the word for other than admiration. I'll just go with admiration.
Sure.
Like, coming from a place of admiration, that I'm pretty confident that that's ethical. If not, you should really tell me, because that's definitely the approach I've taken to, like, every conversation we have about your dissertation now. But other moments when I find that coming up for myself, or when I worry about other people doing that same act into me, I have a lot more questions. So I'm trying to be more cautious about taking joy and watching others struggle, even though I do think it can be a really beautiful thing.
Well, and I think this would be a good place to bring up, especially because you have talked about how you have to decide what to reveal and when and to whom. That the power to decide how to tell your story is it's a point of privilege
Very
that some people
so.
Get to be in. You have exerted some of your privilege to tell us to tell your story in the way you want. But Jeremy Clarkson has certainly, in a lot of ways, like, a much more privileged stance than either of us has. And so, it again, it sort of brings up these questions for me. I almost want to, like, go rewatch the show to, like, try and get, like, a fuller image of who he is.
Like, now that you know the things
that
Wikipedia
says
about him.
Now that I know he's a jerk, I'm just like, okay. So
that's why I didn't
want
to tell you before the show, because I was really curious,
you.
Like, what it would be like for you. But I think there was a deepness to the experience of watching the show for me, knowing how he treats other people, or how he has treated other people on camera in the past, and then going from that to, like,
Yeah.
Here we go. Let's put him in a situation which will make him really uncomfortable, yeah. very out of his depth. Mm-hmm. Still has plenty of privilege to get through it. Like, he's not going to actually get financially hurt by this endeavor whatsoever, or physically hurt by this endeavor whatsoever. Okay, so let's get into the show.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I want to hear everything that you have to say about the show, and then you go home and watch it all again, and then tell me everything all over again now that you know that I think he's a bully.
Yeah, I'm so excited. All right, so for just a tiny bit more background, Clarkson's Farm has one season. It was released on Amazon.
Well, it has one season so far. It's renewed for a second season. Yeah, it's coming out soon.
One season out so far, released in 2021, though they started filming, and essentially Jeremy started farming in 2019.
Which is important. I would like to remind everyone that there was a giant global pandemic.
Something
that
happened in 2020.
Shortly thereafter. Yeah, yeah.
That will come up.
Yep.
So I actually listened to an interview with Jeremy and Caleb, his farmhand, from Irish Farmers Journal.
Okay.
You can find that. I'll put the link in the show notes so you can listen to the interview they did. But that gave me just like a couple of answers to the questions I had.
Okay.
One is Jeremy bought the farm in 2008 on a whim. The financial crisis caused the land that he bought to become available for a price he found compelling.
Okay.
And he hadn't been looking for land. He just sort of had in the back of his mind, like, maybe I'd like to buy some land one day. And then, like, boom, here's a good reason to go buy it. So the other piece of this, he talked in the interview with Irish Farmers Journal about farming and like sustainability mm-hmm. of the land and the farms and so on, and making the point that farmers and farms are considered to be this like big business, mm-hmm. this money maker, yep. and like, oh, they're responsible for like why food sucks and is so expensive. Mm-hmm. But the farming that he's doing and the farming that happens outside of, like, factory farms,
yes.
especially in the United States, but also in a lot of countries around the world, is very different. Mm-hmm. Like, he is not doing factory farming. And so...
And lots of farmers aren't.
Yeah, yes. Right?
I hesitate to say most, but, like, when you see a small farm, they're not doing the kind of thing that you hear about.
Yeah, exactly. And so any issues that we have with, like, how things farmed are usually issues that we have with factory farms. So it was interesting to see him bring that up. And I don't know if that was an opinion that he held before he started farming or after, mm-hmm. but for whatever it's worth, there mm-hmm. you go. So there are 8 episodes in the show, and they cover getting started, like, buying the tractor, getting to know the farm, how to do tractoring, the process of raising sheep, the building and running of a farm store, weather and kind of global warming, harvesting and reaping what you sow, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, all of this is interrupted by a pandemic, and we get to see that happen. There is a cast of characters.
Yes.
They are excellent. Of course, there's Jeremy. Caleb Cooper is a farm worker that mm-hmm. does... most of the work.
Pretty much everything, actually. And Caleb is local to the area.
Yeah.
And so he's worked Jeremy's farm for years before Jeremy has actually, like, come to be on the farm.
He knew the farm. Yes. Yeah. Caleb says that he is Chippy born and bred, which means he's from Chippington North, which is, I guess, the town near in the Cotswolds where he's from. There is Gerald Cooper, who's unrelated to Caleb, and he's a handyman that no one can understand.
Like, me either.
No, like, and at first I thought that Jeremy was just being a bully, because he would, like, make this face about Gerald while Gerald is talking that indicated he had no idea what Gerald was saying. But I had subtitles on, because sometimes when I'm watching, like, especially British shows where they're just, like, chit-chatting, I'll just need subtitles. Like, just so that odd word that I didn't quite understand will come up. And I had subtitles on when Jared was talking, and I was just like, I don't know what Jeremy's problem is. He's such a jerk. Like, yeah, this guy mumbles, or yeah, this guy, like, doesn't talk very clearly, but come on. And then at one point I had the subtitles off, probably 2 episodes in or something. I went, oh, it's fine. I can understand them now, because, like, your ears get used to it. I couldn't understand a word Gerald was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like... a word. It was crazy. Like, So I put the subtitles back on, at least when he was in the scene. So there's Charlie Ireland, who's the land manager, and he's like, he knows everything that needs to be done and when it needs to be done, and he hires out the contractors and like arranges for everything to happen, but he's retiring. Mm-hmm. And that's what has prompted Jeremy to take over. Lisa Hogan is Jeremy's girlfriend and a rational person, in contrast to Jeremy. Like, very often, I mean, you know, all of the farm guys are like doing all of their farm stuff and it's fine. And then Lisa will come by and be like, what is wrong with all of you? Like, this part doesn't need to be done, or this should have been done, or, you know, like, why are we doing this, or whatever. And she's sort of like the voice of us, the mm-hmm. audience, periodically. And then Ellen Halliwell, I have no idea if she's related to Jerry Halliwell, but I kind of want to look it up.
Who's Jerry Halliwell?
Jerry Halliwell is a Spice Girl. So.
You didn't look this up?
Are you going to look it up?
Yeah, how do you spell Jerry?
G-E-R-I. Oh, you know what? Jerry Halliwell is spelled differently than Ellen Halliwell.
Oh, okay. All right. So probably not related?
Yeah. So Ellen is the shepherd, or as Jeremy calls her, insists on calling her shepherdess. My shepherdess, Ellen. And I'm just like, okay. So with some exceptions, Jeremy seems to trust the people who are there to give him good advice based on their expertise. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the professionals. I'm going to do what they say. Mm-hmm. But pretty frequently, he bucks their advice and mm-hmm. things go terribly wrong whenever he does, much to our enjoyment.
Schadenfreude and delight.
Yeah, that's right.
We're going with it.
Yep. All right. So, and then the show is set in the Cotswolds, which is like a sort of southern, sort of eastern part of the UK. And it seems to be just like a really scenic area that's yeah. supported by tourism and farming. So episode one is called Tractoring. Jeremy goes tractor shopping, and this is an instance where you do what you know. So he buys a Lamborghini tractor.
Which is a horrible life choice, and many people tell him this.
Yeah, so everybody tells him that this is a silly purchase. It's too big, it doesn't have the right hitch. It has a European hitch, and it's supposed to have a British one. But Caleb likes the Lambo, and so he feels better about that. Like, later, I will say, in the summer when they're harvesting, the Lambo has air conditioning.
Yes, and Caleb's tractor doesn't.
Yeah. So that's also kind of nice for him.
But also, like, the Lambo does not fit in the barn.
It doesn't
like, we just really need to make
barn.
That clear.
Yeah.
And at one point, Jeremy accidentally turns the entire machine into a different language. And then it's having some kind of problem
yeah.
and
yeah,
can't.
Right.
Do you remember this?
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Like, he doesn't even know how to use it.
No.
Yeah.
And
so,
keep in mind, like, his thing is machines. The
yeah.
only strength that he's bringing to farming is that he understands machinery.
Yes. Yeah.
And so the fact that this tractor is, like, the letdown, when you watch it again now, I'm really curious to see, like, how you rewatch that first episode, knowing more about his car life and his
yeah.
mechanism.
Well, and yeah, to that end, it was a little bit disappointing watching him go to the farm auction because mm-hmm. he needs, like, attachments for the tractor and other equipment. And he had no idea what any of this was. Mm-hmm. And I'm over here, like, my son has prepared me beautifully to watch this episode because I knew. I'm like, oh, that's a hoppo. That's a hopper. That's a harrow. That's a thresher. That's mm-hmm. a seed drill. Like, I know the names of all of these things. Because I've had to read 25 books. Like I don't want to exaggerate. I want to give an honest
yeah.
number. 25 books about farm equipment.
Toddlers are the best.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Yep.
Episode 2 is sheep. So some of Jeremy's land has grass on it that would need to be mown. Instead of doing...
Like once or twice.
Yeah.
A year.
Yes.
To be very clear.
Yeah.
All right.
Instead of doing that, Jeremy decides he's going to get sheep. And Caleb and Charlie both say, don't do this, you're going to regret it. Instead of listening to them, he goes and buys some sheep. And he gets, I want to say 75 of them, but...
Yeah, 78.
78, okay.
I just watched this episode again last week.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, that's great, because I had noted that several, three or four were broken.
Yeah.
In that their reproductive systems weren't going to produce, and I actually wrote in my notes, I failed Abby by not getting the specifics.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Because you have them. Well, I figured, you know, I could come and tell you, it's this part, these organs aren't working.
You'd be like, oh. Well, so for starters, though, he gets to the 78 sheep, mm-hmm. and then, like, four of them immediately go lame.
Yeah, that's
within,
right.
like, a day or two of him getting them on the farm. And he has to put up fencing for them mm-hmm. because he has walls, and sheep love jumping over walls. So just the number of shots that are just, like, sheep jumping over walls. This is where Schadenfreude is really starting to kick in mm-hmm. for me in this episode. Of, like, everyone told him this was a bad idea. Here he is, like, chasing sheep, jumping over walls, and he's pleading with them. Like, he's saying, please, please don't do this. Yeah. And they're just jumping over walls. And you're kind of like, yeah, that's what you get when you don't listen to all the smart people around you, right? But then toward the end, I'm like, oh, the poor guy. Like, it's so dark, and he's running around with this tractor and this electric fence trying to get them all.
No, it's true, because he had tried herding them with a drone.
That
barked.
He had
a recording of a dog barking on the drone. And it turns out sheep don't have an instinctual fear of drones.
Or barking.
Or barking. Yeah, it's the dog, not the bark, that they're afraid of, it turns out. But over and over again, he does this thing where he says, you know, in not these words, I'm going to reinvent this time immemorial process. And then we get to see him, like, being outwitted by sheep because he thought he could do it better. They tear down walls. He has to go ask Gerald to repair walls for him because the sheep, like, broke them. But in addition to caring for the sheep, he wants to breed them. And, like, we get to see him. He has these farm textbooks that keep coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I just love it. But we get to see him keep referring back to the farm textbooks. And when he's learning about the ones that aren't going to produce,
mm-hmm.
he is, like, looking up, like, what could be wrong in the textbook. And there's just a fantastic line. This book is obsessed with sheep's vaginas. Just like, oh my God, Jeremy. Yeah, that's what producing sheep is about. Like, this is the business. So, yeah, I really love watching him being taken down by his own hubris, and this is a great episode for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the caring for the sheep, he goes through this whole big process to get them water. At some point, he uses divining rods.
Yes.
I feel like we should debunk this, but maybe this isn't the
episode. No, we gotta move.
That's right. That's right. At one point, he leaves the sheep alone for 2 days, and they get hurt.
Yep.
And so he's learning if they're not closely monitored, they get underfed, they, like, will have trouble with their lambs, they will hurt themselves. In comes Ellen the shepherd, and she is amazing to watch. She has these sheepdogs, and, like, watching her with them is fantastic. The sheepdogs are amazing. Like, it's just... I don't know. It's really amazing to watch people who are experts at what they do being just in their, being in their element.
Yeah. But, like, also that is really hard, right? That's another moment of enjoying watching someone struggle. Like, she and her entire team, she has, like, what, 3 sheepdogs,
I think?
Like, watching them work is amazing. I went up and watched videos on YouTube of, like, shepherds and dogs afterwards because it was so cool to see, like, how they navigate. Like, there's a beauty in that teamwork. And so that's another aspect
of enjoying
it.
So then we get to the part where he needs to cull the sheep that earlier in the episode he realized we're not going to make it. He says they are scheduled for assassination. And we get this heartbreaking scene where he takes them to, not the butcher, I don't know, to some place. Yeah. Well,
a slaughterhouse.
A slaughterhouse. Yeah. There we go. So he takes him to the slaughterhouse and he, like, goes in to sign the paperwork and he thinks he's going to go out and say goodbye to them, but they're already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, tears up walking to the car. And this also, it's like, oh, wow, Jeremy, you do have a heart.
Yeah.
Like, that's so nice to see.
Yeah.
But we're, you know, we, the audience, also feel terrible because the whole episode has made us feel a little connected to these sheep. Like, we're rooting for the sheep.
Yeah. Versus Jeremy, right?
Versus and Jeremy, that's right.
We, like, get emotionally connected to the sheep, but there's this real beauty in the fact that, like, he did actually start to care about these individual animals and their health and their well-being and everything. And that was a good, challenging episode for me because it really went against his persona in all the other shows that I had seen, right? Of, like, not caring about other people or beings. Like, that's his deal, right? Yeah. And so then this episode being, like, just watching him tear up and hearing it myself, like, he didn't get to say goodbye to these sheep.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
And then he ate them.
Yeah, then he ate them.
Yep. So at some point in the show, he does the math and realizes the sheep are going to cost him like 7,000 to 10,000 pounds per year. And he's going to get maybe 1,000 pounds in return for that. He did say, even in the interview, he said he really did get attached to them.
Yeah. And there is something really lovely and human in that.
Yeah, I agree. So he's human. We have established at the very least that. So episode 3, oh gosh, we gotta move through these.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 3 is called Shopping, and this is Jeremy trying to capitalize on his farm by adding a shop. He has to build the shop before the potatoes go bad. He's got all this tension going on with the village.
I should note, he was voted the 66th least liked person in England.
Oh.
So the fact that he has tension going on with his neighbors over, like, whether he gets to have the permits for the shop is not
surprising, but also everything works out. Like, there's a lot of urgency and tension built around the show.
And there isn't farming, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not manufactured. That's, that's sincere.
But, like, a lot of it is resolved without any trouble. Like, oh, am I going to get the permit? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it all works out. And then he goes on Twitter, where he has 7 million followers.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have to worry about advertising. Mm-hmm. He just, like, says, I'm opening this shop. Here's the address. A bunch of people show up. He makes a bunch of money, gets cleared out. Like, the shop gets cleared out.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Like, this basically is an episode where we get to see what a huge celebrity Jeremy is.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Did that make you revel more in his struggle or root for him more in his struggle?
It just sort of made me annoyed. Like, it made me worry that for the rest of the show, anytime there was struggle, he was going to solve it with money.
Yeah.
And some of those things absolutely happened, and in some cases, he couldn't. There were things that couldn't be solved with money, so that was nice to see. Like, that, it just sort of added a layer to what I got to take joy in with his struggle.
Yeah.
The next episode, episode 4, he calls Wilding, and this is where he wants to do something good for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So he names the falling insect population as the biggest threat facing us today, because if there are no insects, there's no pollination, which means there's no fruits or vegetables that we eat, which means there's no feeding grains to our cows, etc. It's that, like, we cannot sustain life without the insects that pollinate. So he wants to do two things. One is build some, like, wildish areas within his field that can get the pollinators, like the bees and the butterflies stuff, like, into, like, deeper into his farmland. But then also he builds this, like, wild area to support wildlife that he calls a biological supermarket. Like, as he's going through this episode, he is talking about, like, how to make the planet a better place. And this is why I had said before that I was, like, confused about his stance on certain things. Mm. Like, that he, like, mocks Greta Thunberg. I'm just, like, the, like, currently most popular climate activist in the world is the person that you're, like, taking shots at. But then also doing an episode where you're making the environment important to you. Even so, like, it's still, you know, there's still lots of regular Jeremy ignoring good advice and then being bitten in the butt for doing that. Like, he starts digging with a giant digger without consulting anyone else. And then all of them flip out on him. He gets stuck in the mud with the digger and needs a team of tractors to pull... Oh, he gets stuck in the mud with the Lambo. He can't get his beautiful new tractor out.
Lamborghini tractor stuck in the mud.
And he needs a team of tractors to pull him out. And one of the things I was thinking is, like, the people who do this for a living don't just go straight down a steep hill. Like, whenever you see...
with a tractor in the mud. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. They, you know, you'll see they'll, like, create these, like, embankments along the way that they can then climb back up when it's time to go. He's never done this before. Mm-hmm. People are telling him, like, don't just do this. And he does it. And then he suffers. But we get this great, like... Jeremy Clarkson throwing a tantrum like a toddler. It's like really a big chunk of this episode is him like throwing tantrums. He says, why does everybody shout at me? Caleb shouts at me. Charlie shouts at me. And I think this is while Lisa, his girlfriend, is shouting at him because he has made a huge mess of the place. In the next episode, we get into the pandemic and we see the effects of that. And I could actually feel my blood pressure rising when, like, the shutdown, when they're starting to talk about, like, the shutdown and they're sitting there maskless, but, like, using hand sanitizer because we didn't know. Like,
remember, we all did that. That's no, not on them.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's not that. It's so weird watching it.
Yeah.
We get to see in episode 6, they're struggling with this dry spring. We've got sort of a housekeeping episode. There is an episode dedicated to, like, Jeremy sending Caleb into London to go sell wasabi, which is also fantastic to watch.
That was the worst part of the entire show, in my opinion. I felt so bad for Caleb time. Caleb had never been more than 15 minutes outside where he was born.
Yes. Yeah.
And so to send him to London, except once to London on an art trip, and he was so scared he stayed on the bus.
Yeah, that's right.
So to send him to London to try to sell wasabi to restaurants.
Yeah.
In the middle of the pandemic.
At a price that was too much.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really hard.
Yeah.
I didn't like that.
I agree.
I didn't like it.
But yeah, so finally in episode 8, we get to see the chickens come home to roost, if you will.
He has chickens too.
Yeah.
Just to clarify. Yeah. Side note. For you and all our Patreon subscribers, do you remember when I talked about the possum that terrorized my chickens that one night?
Yes.
Do you remember what we named it?
No.
We named it Jeremy.
Oh.
We named it Jeremy because after Jeremy.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense, because Jeremy's a bully. So, in this episode, there's just so much drama. There's music, there's tense moments, dramatic cinematography. Charlie is leaving on vacation. He says, you'll be fine without me. And, like, it's not great, because every mistake that Jeremy failed to fix along the road is coming back to haunt him. It's not actually that bad either. I think they, like, play it up like, this is going to be terrible. But the tractor is doing well. They're, like, unloading seeds. There are, like, lots of light moments. We get to see the tractor still not fitting into the barn.
Yep.
We get to see Jeremy still not learning how to turn the tractor properly after doing this for months.
An entire year.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like, you should know by now. The barley and rape are done at the same time and ready for harvesting. So, like, there's all of this work to be doing that should be spread weeks apart.
Yeah,
like,
and that's not Jeremy's fault.
No, that's the weather's fault.
So some of
this
is just dumb luck, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He doesn't have any place to store the barley. He's trying to get the wheat sold right now. But it's really nice when he's, like, selling the wheat. The guy says, like, oh, yeah, this is really great quality. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy immediately gives credit to Charlie and Caleb.
Yeah.
That was really nice.
That was a beautiful moment for me.
So this is also where we get to see, like, what is this all for? And it turns out that after working for a year, 7 days a week, like, from dawn till dusk,
and sometimes through the night.
And sometimes through the night, Jeremy has made £144 in profit.
Yeah.
Any money that they got to do this came from farm subsidies.
And Amazon paying them
to
do
Amazon.
A reality TV show.
I mean, that went to Jeremy, I'm sure. But, like, yeah, I should have asked the internet if, like Caleb and Charlie and Lisa and Gerald got paid for being on the show.
I know Caleb got paid as part of the, like, what goes into your arable farm includes, like, labor. And so Caleb is definitely explicitly mentioned as, like, the cost for Caleb and machinery.
I see. Okay, cool.
I don't know if he also got paid by Amazon, though. I really hope so, because he is also a fascinating character. I really like him.
Caleb?
Caleb, yeah. He's a great character.
I agree. Well, so Jeremy talks about the lessons learned and the friends made along the way as being the most important part. But he also takes a moment to recognize that the weather, and I think he's implicitly saying global warming, is making farming impossible. Because how would the weather be making, you know, like if people have been doing this for thousands or millions of years, if people have been doing this for as long as human beings have been farming, and it's just the weather, then that's not really something to, like, warn people about in a TV show. But if it's global warming, then it feels like it's, you know, like, is making farming impossible is sort of the important takeaway. Like, something is changing in this job that people were doing is becoming more difficult. What's changing, Jeremy? The globe. The climate.
So he doesn't go that far.
So he never says climate change or global warming in this, like, wrapping up. But
how many times throughout the course of the show did he say this was record-breaking weather?
Yeah.
This was the worst storm any of the farmers I talked to had ever seen. Yeah. This was the worst planting conditions that they'd seen in a decade. Like, all these kinds of things. That's something I'm really curious about on the next season. Like, will he
be explicit about it?
Or, I guess, like, will he talk about the fact that this is a pattern for a reason? It's not just a one-off. It's not just that the universe was repaying him for all of his misdeeds and was like, here's the worst year of farming possible, right? Every year is becoming the worst year of farming. I don't know if that's statistically true, that every single year is becoming, but increasingly, the weather is getting harder and harder for farmers to deal with. And farming was already hard enough to begin with, so yeah, I am very curious to watch the next season see what happens with that. But overall, thoughts on, like, overall review, one sentence, thoughts on Clarkson's Farm.
It's really fun watching a man get his comeuppance.
And, okay, you thought that even before you knew anything really about that person in particular.
Yes. Now knowing who he is, I'm retroactively getting more joy from his struggle.
But I want to add that for me, like, coming in knowing this stuff about him and, like, the persona that he has chosen to portray on TV or in interactions with other people in high-profile situations, I think your review is absolutely true. And the second sentence that I would add to it is, like, and I'm glad that I have enough humanity still to, like, want him to succeed sometimes. Like, there are still moments where when he's really trying to make things work or he's really trying to make things go smoothly, you're like, you know what? I see what you're trying to do and I respect it and I honor the, like, effort and impact and, like, motivation for it. And that's really cool. So if you hated Jeremy Clarkson, try watching it because you might like him a little bit. And if you don't know who he is, watch it because, like Jennifer, you might end up disliking him immensely, and then enjoying.
No, it, like, regardless of your feelings about Jeremy Clarkson as a person, this is an interesting and compelling show. And if you do watch it, or if you refuse to watch it, we would love to hear your opinion.
Yes. Please let us know by writing to us at fascinatingordinary@gmail.com. And if you have thoughts on what the word should be that's the opposite of schadenfreude, meaning when you take joy in watching others struggle, but in, like, a supportive or positive valence, please write to us about that as well, because I would like someone to just come up with one at this point. Like, this is an important enough concept. We both experienced it during the show. We've experienced it at other points in our lives as well. We don't have a word for it. Write to us at fascinatingordinary@gmail.com and tell us what the word should be.
That's right. And if you want to support us, you can do so on Patreon.
Hear more stories about possums named after Jeremy Clarkson.
Right. Yeah, like that's that.
Yes, in our bonus episodes for our Patreon subscribers, we'd love to have you join us there too.
That's right. So thank you for listening. Clarkson's Farm has one season. It was released on Amazon.
Well, it has one season so far. It's that's renewed true. For a second yeah, season. Yeah, it's coming out right. soon. I'm really excited. Do you want to watch it with me now that you
have watched it? Yeah, but you're going to, what are you going to watch, like one episode a week?
I don't know. I can binge things.
Okay.
If you want me to binge things,
no, that's fine. I mean, you and I are not going to sit on a couch for 8 hours and do this, so.
No, that's true.
We have that's lives. True. We have things to do.
We'll FaceTime each other while our children are sleeping, watching from our own separate couches at our own separate homes.
They have a thing for that now, like share.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
We should try that.
All right. There we go. Okay. Okay, so